Side Hustle Show 174, How to Win Freelance Jobs. These are tips from a professional hypnotist.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Konnichiwa, Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where it's all about ideas, action, and results. Coming to you live from Kyoto, Japan this week. One of the things I love most about my job as chief side hustler is being able to work from anywhere, and that's what's going on this trip. And that's one of the biggest benefits of freelancing. It's that location independence. And actually, freelancing is the topic of today's episode. I'm joined by Jesse Jernigan. He runs livegoldrich.com. Now, don't be turned off by the scammy-sounding domain name. He's actually got some really helpful content around winning your first freelance clients, getting out of the constant feast or famine for new work that freelancers face, and really setting up your business for long-term high-value partnerships. Now, Jesse and I connected through the Side Hustle Nation Facebook group, and the cool thing is he's actually a professional stage hypnotist. He's been doing it for 10 years, hundreds of shows, and you'll hear how he's applied some of his performance skills and tactics into his freelancing business. Notes and links for this one are at sidehustlenation.com/JesseJESSE. And while you're there, you can grab, of course, a free PDF highlight reel with all of Jesse's top tips from this conversation. Now, before we dive in, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for today's episode. It's FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks is the affordable small business accounting software for side hustlers and freelancers with invoicing and time tracking built right in. You can get started with your 30-day free trial at FreshBooks.com/sidehustle. I'll be back to tell you a little bit more about FreshBooks, plus my top takeaways from this chat with Jesse after the interview. Ready? Let's get him on the line. You're getting sleepy. Very sleepy.
So I started stage hypnosis in 2007. I graduated college. I had a couple degrees and, of course, the recession hit. Well, I decided I want to be a full-time stage hypnotist, and I got really lucky. I found a couple agencies right away. They hired me. I found a really great mentor. He helped me a lot. And I did really well for the first couple of years. So well, in fact, that kind of my third or fourth year in, I realized that I was going to approach like the earnings ceiling or the earning cap for my industry. And I was doing a couple hundred shows a year. I was selling products. And I just realized like there wasn't really any more room to add money. Like I couldn't keep raising rates past a certain point. I couldn't sell more product. And so I realized I kind of needed to pivot to a new market.
What was the new market?
I kind of got back into freelancing. I freelanced a lot when I was in college. I worked for some major companies. I was a food writer. I did some e-zine stuff. I was an editor for a music magazine. So I understood kind of what was needed, what was expected, and kind of what you can make. And so I started freelancing again, too, online.
Cool. What kind of services? You mentioned writing. Was that the main focus of the freelance service at that point?
For me, it was. I was one of those guys that like I can sit down, I can write for a long time, that I can write through issues. I understood what you need to edit something. I'm not a great like grammar nerd, but I'm really great at editing things so they read well, so things come through clearly, that they're easy to understand. And so when I first started freelancing, I did a lot of that. I did a lot of content editing. For the comic books, I actually adjusted panels so the panels read easier for readers. And then I kind of just got away from it as I started touring full time.
And so you're still doing the stage hypnosis. What did you find as, even in college, maybe take us back to those days? Like, you know, why would somebody hire you, you know, versus somebody with more experience?
When I started, I didn't have a lot of experience with the technical skills. So I'd go into these interviews and I'd win these interviews and I'd get these jobs with these pretty big clients, even though I wasn't, I guess, the most experienced person. And it wasn't because I was cheap. It was because I was able to negotiate and talk with them on a level that resonated. So other guys would go in there and they would sound smarter and they would be more professional. But I just knew human nature, you know, from negotiating with people for shows to negotiating with agents to negotiating with editors. I understood what people needed to hear, even if I couldn't bring what they needed to the table right away.
I think that's an overlooked skill. I think at least when I'm out doing freelance work, it's very much focused on, you know, here's the skill that I have. Here's what I can do for you. Here's the deliverable. Not so much focused on like the personality fit or the negotiation side of things.
Yeah. And like you see it a lot when I was a stage hypnotist and doing a lot. It's like right now I just do one season a year. So I do about 30 to 40 shows a year. But when I was doing clients with stage hypnosis, because stage hypnotists don't get booked because their booking materials are awful. Their booking materials are all about how great they are, how smart they are, how fast they are, not recognizing that that is not what people wanted. You know, they wanted to be reassured. They wanted to know that you understood their needs. So by the time I really started getting into freelancing heavy like I am now, it just carried over. All of those positive traits I learned from all those years of working as a stage hypnotist just really spoke through, and it really works in kind of our internet society.
Are you proactively pitching clients or doing kind of a reactive model like on Upwork? Somebody's going to post a proposal or post a request for proposal and you say, I can bid on that job.
Well, I do a bit of both. First, I love Upwork. I think Upwork is a great place. I don't promote Fiverr that much. I think that's kind of a race to the bottom. And even we had a little conversation on Facebook about there are ways to monetize, but I just don't see scale. Thing I like about Upwork is there are a lot of clients on Upwork that let you do scalable work. And so although it is reactive, and I agree with that, you know, if you know what you're doing as a freelancer, you can go on there and see, okay, this is a good client, this is a bad client, they've paid out or they haven't paid out. You can read reviews. But at the same time, I am proactively, constantly positioning myself to do better work. And I do a lot of that through Facebook groups.
Let's go back on the Upwork, on the scalable clients. What do you mean by that?
So I think the biggest issue people have with Upwork is they get started, they get maybe a job or two, and then they get frustrated. They realize that they're spending more time pitching clients than they are getting clients. And the reason for that is people pitch the wrong clients. If you pitch the right client and they're in your field and they need your service, and this is assuming that you don't offer a service that is like a one-off service for that one specific thing, you can really create an ongoing relationship. Like I look for two things. When I go to a client, I see, is this a one-time project or are they actually a company that constantly has projects come up like this? If they're a company that constantly needs this work, I want to really focus and pitch on them. And the reason for that is if they like my work, they're going to send me private invites. So not only am I not wasting my connects, which if you're not an Upwork person, a connect, you get so many connects a month, so that means you can send so many proposals. So I'm not only wasting connects, I'm also saving time because they're pitching me. So it removes the whole barrier between me and rates and them and work.
Okay, so it's kind of like a credit system. So this prevents people from like just copy-paste like proposing on every single job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you still get a lot of that. You can like, if you bid on a project, within the first 10 minutes of you bidding, you're going to see another 30 bids pop up. And it's not that 30 people sat down and wrote good proposals. It's that 30 mass content marketers copy and paste it and then sent like a copy and pasted template.
Will people come out and say in their proposal, this is an ongoing need of ours, or are you just going to have to read between the lines on that?
You definitely have to read between the lines. And here's this is a contentious point. I'm going to take a stance on it, but other people might disagree. There will occasionally be companies on Upwork and part of their proposal pitch is, if you like you, we are going to keep hiring you. And every time I see that in my mind, I think, nope, because that's the kind of thing you would say to attract a high quality client, knowing that a high quality client would normally read your proposal and go, okay, this person isn't going to hire me for ongoing work. I don't want to build a relationship with them.
Oh my gosh. Now I feel like a sleaze because I totally put that in some of my job proposals.
Oh man. Yeah. See, that's the thing. And I'm sure you actually hire for ongoing work. So it's contentious, but I would say a majority, right? You can't count everybody. That's not fair. But I would say a majority of people on Upwork who say, we want to hire for ongoing work. It's almost kind of like a threat. It's like, if you work within what we want and you kind of take our abuse, we'll keep giving you money. And people do that on Upwork. They abuse, like, I'm part of a forum where it's all Upwork people. And it is amazing how much of that forum is just people asking for advice, how to avoid getting abused or cheated by a client. But, and I say, I mean, I hate saying that because like Upwork is actually an amazing place and it's an amazing place to get the right clients. Like right now, I have three clients that have me scheduled for $6,000 worth of work, and I'm halfway through that contract. I've got another client that's got me signed up for like $3,000 worth of work, and I'm a third of the way through that. I'm negotiating another contract right now for just like an ongoing hourly rate for the next 6 months.
When you were just getting started, I mean, did you have to accept some jobs for less than you were probably wanting to kind of build up your portfolio? Like how do you go about pitching those first clients? Because always is a risk.
Okay, so this is kind of another contentious point. There are people that think, oh, you need to start small. You need to get three or four good reviews. You need to get a couple hours. I don't think that's true. I think if you know your market, you don't need to do that at all. You can start pitching at the rate you deserve right away. With that said, if you're not used to Upwork or you're having trouble researching how it works, it would be smart to start small just so you can see how the process works. You can see how proposals go out, how to talk to clients, how to create milestones, how to do billing. It's something you can learn in a week or two with just one or two clients. Mm-hmm. But if you have trouble with that kind of stuff, it would make sense because you don't want to charge your clients for you to learn. I didn't start small. I mean, I started at $65 and I just raised my rate to $95 an hour.
What other types of skills do you see as being applicable to this kind of like scale strategy or this recurring strategy?
I would say the three things you need to use whenever you're trying to create scale is first, you need to assess. You need to look at the client, whether it's a client you've chose through Upwork or a client that you want to create an ongoing relationship with as a freelancer who's either pitching cold or if somebody's building a relationship or you're doing a Facebook group. You want to go in with that person and kind of give them an overview of everything that you can accomplish with the service you offer. I'm a copywriter, and I know that people need everything from landing pages to ad formatting to email sequences to nurturing sequences to white paper reports to opt-in pages. And so I go in, I assess every single thing that I think I could do for them at that level, and I slowly drip it onto them. Now, a lot of times people don't need all of that, right? They're going to be like, look, I just need a landing page, all this other stuff. That's great. Don't need it. And then that's fine.
Do you put that all in your initial proposal?
Okay, so I'll tap the initial proposal at the end of this. But no, like I don't send it all at once. I make suggestions through our conversation. And then that's a good way to transition to this initial proposal idea. One of my key hacks that I teach on my site is the idea of approaching proposals differently. Most people try to use proposals as this hard sell. And that's why so many people are like, oh my God, I'm not getting any jobs. Nobody's responding to my proposals. I don't know what's wrong. Mm-hmm. What's wrong is that people are trying to sell you up front. I mean, if I came to you, Nick, I'm like, I've been a member of your board for a couple of years. I've just got on the Facebook group. And if the very first day, very first thing, I haven't read any of your stuff, I was like, hey, Nick, I've got a podcast. You should call me. You're going to think this guy's a weirdo. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But we kind of created a conversation. And by creating a conversation through a proposal or any way, you create social proof. A proposal should be used as a way to signify the value of what you can add to a product, not a hard sell.
Now I'm like going back in our interaction, right? You're totally right. Because it was like, hey, Jesse's name was familiar to me. I'd seen him in the Facebook group. I'd seen him probably reply to a couple emails. And so when he's like, hey, I want to come on the show and I think I can talk about topics X, Y, and Z, it was like, yeah, let's do it. Versus like, oh, this is totally a cold pitch. Like, who are you?
Yeah. And like, you even, if you remember that first email I pitched you, I said, I've been wanting to pitch you for almost a year.
Yeah. But yeah.
I just now felt like, okay, I've got something, A, that I feel like I can bring, like this information I'm sharing with you guys, I feel it's really good and I've really got it spot on at this point. But I also felt like I was at a point with you where it's like, okay, this guy has brought value. He's not just here to be like, hey, come to my stuff. Look at me.
You know, everyone listening is like, well, I don't want to wait a year to pitch a client. So
that goes to the proactive thing then too, right? Like you are constantly creating relationships. That's one of the problems people have as freelancers. They're like, you know, I get like one or two jobs, but I just never get any work. And it's because they get complacent. They think that because they've got one or two, it just doesn't work. And like so in my blog, I do monthly income reports, and I do it because I want people to see if you're going to like convert to freelancing, you need to understand there are going to be huge months and there are going to be months where like you either don't get paid or you get stuck in a weird billing cycle. So I had a really popular post I did where I had a $10,000 a month because of the work that I had done. And it got all this stuff and people loved it and they commented on it. And then 2 months later, because of a weird billing error, I had a $300 a month.
Ooh.
And actually, I had a hard time with myself because I was like, you know, I had technically had like a $3,000 a month. But because of the billing error, I wasn't going to get paid till the next month. And so I was honest with my audience and I told them, I made $300 this month. I did $3,000 worth of work and I'm going to get paid, but it's not till next month. And I wanted them to know, it's like, this stuff happens. If you are not in a position to be prepared to handle this, you should not go full time yet because these things will happen.
Okay, this is good. So let's dive more into that proposal because I think, you know, people want to be selective of the connects that they spend and then, you know, really make the most of those. So do you say like, okay, hey, I noticed you were asking for a landing page. I can totally get this done. Here's my price. Or do you do like the Daniel DiPiazza, like I'm going to send you a personalized like video conversation pitch. And he actually never included the price in that first bid. Or, you know, what's that strategy look like?
Okay, first off, and this is just my opinion, but you should never send a price in your first bid because you just gave them an opportunity to tell you no. if they're honestly interested in hearing more from you, you want to remove as many possibilities for them to tell you no as you can before you start. A. B, I don't send the personalized video thing. To me, that's a waste of time. Like, a great proposal can be written and be understood. Like, it takes me about 5 to 6 minutes to write an amazing proposal. And kind of the breakdown of my proposal is, first off, here's a key tip. Like, this only works for Upwork, but like, this is worth everything listening for. So if you don't know your client's name, scroll down, because under your listed job that you're thinking about bidding on, they'll have reviews of the client. Scroll through the reviews and see if you can find the client's first name. If you can, put their first name in the proposal. So like, let's say I'm pitching you and I find out your name's Nick. My very first line would be like, "Hey Nick, I'm Jesse," and da da da. Because even if you don't like the proposal, you're going to read it because you see your name and you're thinking, "Do I know this guy? How does he know my name?" You know,
instead of the dear sir or madam.
Yeah, and like I tell you, like 90% of your people are going to listen to this and not think about it. But that right there, I guarantee, had made me an extra $10,000 last year just getting gigs that I didn't deserve because I had that first name.
Yeah, you get the open rate first, and then you know, get them to read, and then get them to sign.
Yeah, and so like when I go into the proposal, the first thing I do is I reassess back to them in my own language what it is they want. And the reason that's important for Upwork is it lets people see that they haven't received another template email, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to go, okay, so this guy's a real guy. He actually read my thing. He understands what I want. And then the next step is, depending on what the project is, whether it's a large project or if it's a scaling project or if it's just a one-off, I then speak directly to why they would want that. For instance, you brought up the landing page thing. I would have to assess if they want a landing page because that's for them to get sales. Are they getting a landing page as part of a nurture email sequence? Do they want to create more opt-ins? Have they tried something before? So I want to speak to them in a way that understands what the result they want is. Because it's one thing for them to say, oh, I want a 10,000% result. It's another thing to say, I have a cold list. This is going to go out to 10,000 people. I would like to have this conversions. And then I can come to them by reading that in their proposal and say, I understand you're working a cold list. If I was working a cold list and I was using a landing page, I would use an infographic-based landing page. And I speak to them about the experience that I have in regards to this, tell them what I've found. I never say this is what works. I always tell them, I found this to be the most responsive. I found this to be the most successful. I found this to increase. You're never giving them definites, but you're giving them guiding terms. And the guiding terms help them understand that you're not hard pitching them. You're not feeding them a bunch of lines. People have really great bull crap. And even people who don't know a lot really have a good one. And I dealt with this as a stage hypnotist. I call it the gratitude theory. If you go into something grateful for being able to serve somebody, they'll know that. And if you feel that and you represent that while you write, you're going to have to speak honestly. You're going to have to speak truthfully. Like I never promise somebody, it's like, oh, I'm going to increase your reach 10,000%. You're going to get $1 million in sales and blah, blah, blah. But I go in telling them, this is what I think you need. This is the results I've had in the past. This is what I think is going to work for you. And I just give them an open, like I'll share a testimonial too if I have one that relates to their project. Like at this point, I have enough testimonials that I always have something that relates. But let's say I've got a landing page. Well, I just finished two landing pages and I got to put like a testimonial. So I'll be like, oh, I did a similar project to yours. This is the testimonial I got. Does this fit the direction you'd like to take? If so, we should talk. And that's it. I don't say I'm available or I have so many hours. I don't try to put constraints on them because it goes back to the bullcrap detector. I just invite them to see if it fits what they're looking for to take the next step.
And then they'll respond and say, what's your rate or something like that?
Okay, let's run that real quick. So you email me back. It's like, Jesse, really interesting. I need to know what your rate is.
Yeah.
Now I can give you my rate because at this point we've created a conversation. But as a freelancer, I'm not interested in working with somebody that is money oriented only. Because if you're worried more about saving money or spending within a specific amount, you're going to be a very difficult client because you might not understand the expectations that are like coming from my side, or you don't have realistic like goals. So it puts a lot of pressure on me. So if the first thing is like, hey, we're all about price, I would respond to you like this, like, oh, Nick, hey, it's so great to hear from you. I understand your interest in price. You know, I deal with price every day. I would like to ask you three questions before I give you a price. And then I would develop three questions that allow them to further explore their concept. So I'm getting at least one more contact with them. And the more contact you have with the client, the greater chance you have of closing a product. But it also forces them to very closely look. Like if they want a landing page, I say, is this going out to a hot or cold list? Is this landing page meant to be an upsell? Is this landing page touching on what your people need, or is this touching on what you think they need?
Okay.
You know, and then you've created like, oh, okay, this guy kind of understands. And if they respond in a way that is confusing or it shows that they don't know what they're doing, I'll just pitch them a price and I'll make it really high because it's probably not in my best interest to work with them.
Well, I think this is a really interesting tactic because it kind of addresses the, you mentioned the race to the bottom on Fiverr, you know, the race to the bottom on Upwork as well, you know, dealing with people bidding on jobs from all over the world and probably willing to accept a much lower rate than you. But you're positioning yourself as, instead of an order taker, a more consultative approach. Like, why do you want what you say you want? Like, what are you actually trying to accomplish? And for the jobs that I've posted on there, the proposals that kind of go that next step and say, you know, actually talk about, you know, what's the revenue picture for me look like? I wouldn't be investing this money if there wasn't going to be a return on it. And the people who address that, you know, tend to make the short list versus everybody else who's just getting X'd out.
Yeah. And the thing is, it protects you too. It's like something you don't think about because you get so excited about getting work. But like, once you have constant work coming in, you need to put hedges between you and bad clients, because bad clients can set up difficult milestones. They cannot pay you. I don't think the percentage rate on Upwork matters. Like, I've got a 76% score rate, and the last 15 jobs I've had, I've all got 5-star ratings. So I have no clue how that works.
What does that mean? That means 3 out of 4 of the jobs you bid on, you win?
Out of the last 15 jobs I've did for clients, every single one of them gave me a perfect score.
Well, what was the score rate?
Oh, the 76% rate is like the client satisfaction rate. So it's like saying, like, they're essentially saying, like, I am a C- grade freelancer.
Yeah, that sucks.
It's terrible.
Okay.
It doesn't affect me at all. I still, like, I, you know, if you earn above, I think it's like $50 on Upwork an hour, you're automatically in like the top 20% of earners on Upwork and blah, blah, blah. I only do about $2,000 worth of work a month on Upwork. I could do more, but I explore other avenues, but it hasn't stopped me.
You get that conversation going, you know, the more touch points you can have before you name a price. I think that's smart, even though that probably would be annoying to me as somebody who's bidding for, especially for a quick job. But you mentioned other avenues. What are some of the other avenues you like for getting this type of work?
Well, one thing I've been working on a lot is Facebook groups. And I've watched a lot of people, because I'm a member of a lot of groups. It's how I promote. It's how I do research. And I see so many people post like legitimate job requests on Facebook groups, and people just go, you should hire me. I'm immediate, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh man, you know? And I would go and I'd follow up with these people that sent these hire me things. I'm like, do you ever get hired doing this? And they're always like, no, these people don't want work. They're lying. They're wasting my time. And I'm like, I don't think that's the case. So I took my approach on Upwork and I just kind of switched it over to these Facebook groups. And I split tested it. I had different open rates. I had different ways of talking with people. But my whole premise was I'd say, hey, you know, if you have an issue, I might be able to help. Do you have 5 minutes to talk? And if they said yes, and they agreed to that, I'd take them to a Skype conversation. After we had the Skype conversation, I would see if they actually had a problem, if they knew what they were talking about. And if you, any field you're in, if you're a freelancer in an online field, and you're good at what you do, you're going to instantly know whether or not this person knows what they're talking about, if they actually need what they're talking about, if it's going to make a difference, if you can actually bid. So this is good for you too. Okay. It's the fastest way to spend the least amount of time to get the most information, right? And then I'd say, hey, if you're actually interested, and this is like word for word what I'd say on the Skype system with them, I'd say, hey, if you're actually interested in getting a proposal, I can draw one up real quick. It'll have 3 tiers, and each tier will just be fit to a price. So if you're price shopping, there's one cost for you that would be great. If you're interested in growth, there's one cost. And if you're interested in expansion, there's a big cost. Does that sound good? And if they said yes, I'd just send them a 3-tiered proposal. And if they said no, I would always follow up with, well, if you need, and this is one thing I think is really important online, I'd tell them, if you need any other assistance and it's something I can't offer, just message me. And I've got a bevy of freelancers I work with. If I can connect you with somebody, I will.
Do you ever do that through, like, I've heard the 3-tier price structure from a handful of people. Do you do that with Upwork clients at all, or only in the Facebook group strategy?
Sometimes I will do it with Upwork. The only time I do it with Upwork is when a client has a project where it would make sense for them to have more, and I feel they don't understand that. And before I'd even send them a 3-tiered proposal, I would send them examples of websites, landing pages, email sequences, where I explained to them, this was a total package and that's why this worked. If you were to do a total package, which would also include X, Y, and Z, that would be more effective towards your goals. I don't know if that's the direction you like to take, but if it is, we should talk. So I give them permission to tell me yes or no, but they only get permission after they have information.
Okay. So these groups are just kind of specific to, you know, online business, or they're like...
All right, I'm going to get real niche here for a second.
So okay.
I do copywriting that helps mid-level businesses get more attention and make more money. So I deal with mid-level branding companies, mid-level social media marketers, people that are creating their second or third opt-in product, things that, like, they're established.
Yeah.
But they're having trouble getting the next level. And so I want to work with people that are easy to work with, that I know I have money, and that know I can be future people. So I look at that and I go, okay, I'm going to be dealing with, my niche market is people 28 to 35. It is both male and female. For men, it is more technical-minded issues or people selling fitness products. And for women, it is essentially, and I hate saying this because it sounds bad, but it's women who sell like the feel-good vibe blog. Like, it's a lot of pretty colors. They have a lot of feel-good guides. But there are people that it's like a very light version of Tony Robbins.
Okay.
And then I go into Facebook groups and I just like look at all their members, because like if you're not a member of a group, you can still see who's a member. And I'll click through 40 or 50. And if I see that there's a lot of people that fit my MO, what I'll do is I'll add myself to that group.
Okay.
Yeah. So like I've done market research. It hasn't cost me anything, but maybe an hour. And then I just start reading the post, and I, you know, like I'll add things real simple, and I'll always try to be a service. I never pitch my services unless something comes up that specifically fits the guidelines that I can help. Then if it does, then I offer them that 5-minute Skype chat.
So you're kind of embedding yourself in these communities first.
Yeah, like I make it a point to create social proof long before I do anything. Because when people see my name, they need to go, oh, I've read that guy's stuff. He knows what he's talking about. Like right now, I'm pitching. Do you know Copy Hackers, the website?
Yes.
Huge website, right? And if like you get on it, that's a big deal for a copywriter. I did a project not too long ago where I increased my opt-in rate for my landing page 297%. That was enough for me to actually get featured by Ramit Sethi in one of his classes.
Oh, cool.
So what I did was I downloaded the class, took screenshots of them talking about me, and then I asked for permission to use them from his team. I got permission. So now I'm going to go back to Copy Hackers because I have that social proof, right? And it's the same principle that works on Facebook groups. I'm leveraging things that I've done in the past to create value for myself in the future.
That's what it's all about.
Oh, right? Like that's the difference between 10,000 and 100,000.
Well, Jesse, this is cool stuff. People can learn more about you at livegoldrich.com. Any other place they should check out?
I have a really great article with Danny Mergiles on his site, Freelance to Win. It kind of goes really in depth about how I was the least qualified guy for a really large job, and it explores how I won the contract. That'd be a great read. I'll give you guys a link to my Freelancers Insider list. I send out emails and a newsletter, but the big thing is once a month I send out what I call like a deep mind hack, and it's just a way to really effectively position yourself in the market, whether it's through negotiation or understanding your pricing, et cetera.
Sounds good to me. We'll link that stuff up in the show notes, and we'll wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Always take your time. It's not about being first. It's about being right for the person you want to be first for.
That's very deep. I like it.
I Tony Robbins'd you there.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Jesse, thanks so much. We'll catch up with you soon.
Awesome, Nick. It was amazing. Have a great day.
This edition of The Side Hustle Show is brought to you by FreshBooks.com. Now, when you apply Jesse's tips and begin to score more clients, you're going to want an organized and professional way to get paid. That's where FreshBooks comes in. FreshBooks is an award-winning cloud-based accounting service that's giving thousands of side hustlers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs like you the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. I originally signed up for FreshBooks so I could invoice a writing client of mine and save on the PayPal fees, but they do a lot more than just invoicing. You're going to find auto billing for recurring payments, time tracking, which comes in really handy if you're billing hourly or trying to figure out what your effective hourly rate is. You'll find late payment fees and reminders, expense tracking with just snapping a picture of your receipt, and automatic syncing with your bank account. Now, if you've got questions, you can always count on FreshBooks support rock stars to go above and beyond when you need a hand. So to try FreshBooks free for 30 days, go to freshbooks.com/sidehustle or enter the Side Hustle Show in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/sidehustle for your completely free 30-day trial. Now, my top takeaways from this conversation with Jesse, number one, relationships first, sales second. People are on Upwork or they're posting on Facebook because they don't have a go-to person for their problem yet, but you can become that person. Number two, by becoming that person and targeting customers that are on a growth trajectory, you can set yourself up for ongoing work. When I was first building my shoe site, the developer took, and I posted this job on guru.com, which is similar to Upwork, the developer took kind of that consultative approach, and I spent more than $100,000 with him and with his team over the course of the next 8 or 9 years. And that was, you know, probably more than 10x that original bid. So he became my go-to guy for web development by taking that relationship and consultative approach. Number three is you don't necessarily need to start at the very bottom of the price scale. And I thought Jesse's point of actually never including a price in your first proposal was really interesting. You don't have enough information yet, and the client doesn't know, like, and trust you enough yet. That was really interesting. He's like, that just gives them a reason to say no, not to say yes. So that might result in fewer clients, but hopefully higher value ones, hustling smarter, not harder. Grab a free PDF highlight reel from this episode at sidehustlenation.com/Jesse, J-E-S-S-E. And, you'll find all the notes and links from that from the episode there as well. So that's it for me. I got to go check out some temples or some markets or something, and of course grab some delicious food. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of the Side Hustle Show. I also got a Japanese connection for that one. Until then, hustle on.
Thanks for listening to the Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.